Bird Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And it's been an interesting week in technology. Of course, we're going to feature today Steve Ballmer. He announced his retirement last week. And NASA is launching an experiment where they're going to use laser communication in space because they're running out of bandwidth. Because they have the airways, so they want to go to start using light, so they're running a test.
Interesting.
And they can get actually higher bandwidth, they just have to worry about the clouds.
Is this something that's used on Earth, or is this something completely new?
No, it's, you can use laser communication on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, that's what fiber optics is.
Oh, well,
but then if you go through the atmosphere, then you've got atmospheric effects. But in space, you don't have atmosphere, so.
They're doing this without cable, though,
yeah,
right?
No cable.
Right.
No, just.
Okay.
Just lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft and Google are going to sue NSA over all those FISA demands for data. And iPhone's got a nice trade-in program now, actually.
I heard. I was going to ask you about this.
Yeah. Well, see, now, I have a 4S, so mine is worth $221.
And the new phone is how much? $600?
$600. Now, if you trade in a 5, they'll give you $336. They'll give you about half price. If you trade in a 3GS, what do you have?
I have a 4G, I think. I have the lowest version.
Oh, you have a 4G. You'll get $151.
Forget it. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't the 3G worth $20 or something?
No, the 3GS is $52. But if Verizon gives you that's what Apple gives you.
Mm-hmm.
Verizon gives you only $27 for the 3GS. So it's a NASDAQ, of course, is finally fessing up what happened for the 3-hour outage. Remember this happened last week?
Exactly.
You know, it's taken a week before before they would actually fess up what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it's not any sort of hacking. It's just a software flaw, and they're actually blaming it on the New York Stock Exchange. So let me tell you, I'm going to go through the whole twisted logic here on why it's really the New York Stock Exchange's fault. And this is the week of the 50th anniversary of the Compact Cassette, so we'll give a little bit of that history.
Wow.
And, of course, we had a huge, huge mailbag.
Tremendously weighty.
Yes.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Let's get it up here. Okay, there we go.
Loaded with bricks or is it mail?
It is loaded. It is loaded. It's we have packages here. People are sending us,
usually cookies and
cookies,
good things like that.
Yeah,
so
they are.
We would encourage that.
High-tech cookies.
Mm-hmm.
We got an email from Alice in Wonderland. Dr. Schertz, I own two PCs, a window and a Mac and an iMac and an HP printer. I also have a Vonage device. I plug all this into a power strip. Now, I own two power strips that are at least 10 years old, and I've heard that, I could save electricity if I'd get a better one, more green. What brands do you recommend for this? And it's, of course, it protects PCs from electrical storms and other things. Thanks. Love your show. Listen every Saturday at 9 a.m., Alice in Wonderland. Well, Alice, it's actually not a power strip. It's a surge protector.
Mm-hmm.
A power strip just, gives you a lot of plugs. But a surge protector will actually protect you in the case of an electrical storm or some kind of surge. Now, if you got one that's 10 years old and it's a cheap one, I would suspect that you'd want to replace it. I don't think you're going to save any electricity, however. They're actually surge protectors actually are rated in terms of how much energy they will absorb. And so an energy rating is in the metric system is a joule. So if you typically have a simple computer, you need about a 200 joule absorption for a single computer. If you've got multiple things hooked up, you need more. So if you get a power strip with, say, 6 plugs, they'll typically give you 200 joules per plug or around 1,000 joules. So usually I'm not going to get a power surge protector, which has a capacity of less than 1,000 joules. They go up to as much as 2,400 joules if you want to, you know, have more capacity there. Now, there are two, you have different kinds of power surge. You've got kind of a slow power surge. You got these fast spikes. Now, the fast spikes are difficult to truncate because it requires a very high-speed circuit. So they use metal oxide devices called MOVs. And these MOVs sort of sacrifice themselves in order to shunt the signal, shunt the voltage. And so over time, if you have a lot of lightning coming into your device, your MOV devices, which are designed to shunt in the case of a high peak power, gradually all become depleted and you don't have it anymore. That's why the more expensive surge protectors have a light that says protection. And so as long as the protection light is on, it means you've got MOVs there ready to go. Once the protection light goes off, you got to replace it because all your MOVs have been shot.
You just answered the question I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how you know it's done then, right?
Yeah, there's really no other way to do it. And so then they typically have two additional layers of circuits that respond to the slower, you know, they choke out the power, but it's not this thin oxide that breaks down. So they are slower. So most of them are three-stage devices. And if you get any, you know, sort of super cheap one, it's not going to be that good. So, you know, you could go to any of the big box stores and you could look at their surge protectors. And if you get one, don't get a cheap one, but, you know, get one maybe $20 or so,
yeah.
You'll be okay. But don't get the
$5.99.
The Walmart $5.99 special, because chances are it's really not going to work when you actually need it. Now, some of the really expensive ones will have like $25,000 guarantee. If they will guarantee up to $25,000 if your computers get broken, and so they try to sell you with the guarantee. But I think if you just get something with good MOV devices in it and a couple of stages of choking, then you're going to be okay. But it's not going to save you any power.
The only way to save power is to buy more energy efficient things to plug into the surge
protector,
right?
That's right. That is the only way to do that. I think what she's talking about is that you know, like if you have a charger, like an iPhone charger, mm-hmm. and you leave the device always charging, the charger itself uses power. So even though your device isn't using power, you know, the charger's using power.
Sure.
So if you actually absolutely want to save all power, just completely, there's a switch on the unit. You could just turn it off.
On the surge protector.
On the surge protector, you could just turn it off, and then it will depower all of the transformers, mm-hmm. that are hooked to the power. And so they do absorb. It's sort of this. This silent power is being absorbed by all devices, even when they're turned off. So if you're really worried about that, just get a surge protector strip with a switch on it.
In the grand scheme of things, it's not that much, but it is something, right?
It is something, yeah. And, of course, I guess you don't have to have a switch. You just unplug it. But I'm thinking the switch is more elegant. And I think Alice in Wonderland needs elegance.
Well, that might be a sign as to how good the device is. If you buy a surge protector that doesn't have a switch on it, it's probably not a very good surge protector, is it?
I'm thinking you're right. We got an email from Mary. Dear Dr. Schertz, a few months back I started a job as a specifications writer. Currently, I'm repurposing maintenance manuals into PDF documents. These manuals are scanned into Adobe Acrobat Pro X. One of the most time-intensive things I have to do is to bookmark the table of contents in each section in this 300-page book that has multiple chapters.
Wow.
Creating the bookmarks is you've got to highlight the section, create the bookmarks. But it turns out that this particular group wants a certain format for all of their bookmarks. And the way I'm getting the format in Adobe Acrobat Pro X is the wrong format. I've got to go in and manually change it. Did you have any thoughts on how I could do a workaround for this? Well, I do have one thought, Mary. You can create your bookmarks. When you create a bookmark, you simply highlight the text you want, you know, that you want to bookmark. and then you you create the bookmark. Then you actually want to change the color and the style of the bookmark. So you can go to View, Show Toolbar Items, and pick Properties Bar. And then on the Properties Bar, you can define the bookmark's appearance. Now, the nice thing is you can reuse that appearance if you format it at once. What you do is you select the bookmark, and from the Options menu, choose Use Current Appearance as the new default. So you format once and make the new formatted appearance the default, so then every new bookmark you make is already formatted. So that would be your workaround. And now what you'd have to do, though, is you've got different hierarchy of bookmarks that have different layouts. You'd do all one hierarchy, then you would change the formatting and do the next hierarchy. So there is a workaround. Good question. We got an email from Lynn in Ohio.
She's not from those Ohio people, is
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she is, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
She's from this Ohio people. Yeah, this is the Ohio bunch.
Dear
Tech Talk, I have an iPhone, and I don't like to have text message notification and pictures.
Here we go.
Oh, my God. What kind of operation do they have up there in Ohio?
I don't know.
And I don't like to have my text message pictures show up in my iPhone when it's locked, especially when I'm at work.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
This is all... Never mind.
I also don't like the iPhone to beep every time a text message comes in because everybody looks at my iPhone because they're expected to see something interesting.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything that I can do? Okay, I have an iPhone S. Love the show. We listen to it over the internet each Saturday morning. Lynn in Ohio. Well, Lynn, you can turn off all notifications, and you can protect your coworkers from all those evil pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you can protect it even when they can't see it if your iPhone is locked. So what you want to do is go to Settings, and then you select Notifications. Each application can be adjusted individually. So you have to go into each application, and so this would be the message application. You go in and you basically can turn off the notification center. Now, that's that pull-down window shade,
yeah. You
know. Yes, so you can turn that off so they don't show up there. You can adjust the alert style. You can either have no alert, a banner alert, or just a regular alert. The regular alert's right in the middle of the screen. The banner alert's at the top of the screen, and the no alert's just no alert.
There's no alert.
Yeah. You can adjust the alert style. That's the alert style. You can turn off the badge icon. You know that little number that shows up how many messages you got?
Yes.
You can turn that off. Now, I actually kind of like to use that. What I do, I turn off all notifications, but I leave the badge icon on. That way, when I open my phone, I can see, is there a message there?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can turn off the sounds. Too, and you just simply turn off the sounds. And that down at the bottom, they have view and lock screen. And you can turn off so that nothing is viewed when you're in the lock screen. So if you do all of this and your phone is locked, nobody is going to know what kind of incoming text messages or your pictures you're getting.
Well, here's the thing,
though. And you'll be
though.
Safe at work.
She's not safe at work because people have already seen this stuff, so her reputation's already damaged,
I think it's too late. I think it could be a problem.
The cat is out of the bag.
The cat's out of the bag. And then if she's looking at her text messages, they're going to look over her shoulder now anyway. So
everybody's
jockeying
for the cubicle next to Lynn.
I think it's actually too late, Lynn, but you know, you should have asked this question last year.
Yeah.
We got an email from Jim in Bowie. Dear Doc and Jim, I'd like to run Windows on my iMac. What are my options? Love the show, Jim and Bowie. Well, Jim, you have three options to run Windows on an iMac. These are virtualized devices will allow virtual computers to be installed on your operating system. You have Parallels Desktop 8 for the Mac. That costs $52. It's from Trinity Software.
It's not bad.
You've got VMware Fusion, which is priced at around $49 retail. That's retail, but, you know, on the street, I've seen it as low as $14.
Street, you mean like at some junk store?
No, you just go on. You just do a search. You can get it cheaper over the internet some places. Then they also have VirtualBox by Oracle, which is free, and it's open source software. Now, so if you're looking for something free, Jim, VirtualBox is good. Now, VirtualBox, of course, used to be a Sun product. It was part of their open source suite, and then when Oracle bought Sun, They brought, of course, brought VirtualBox over there. Now, VMware Fusion is an excellent way to run virtual operating systems on any host. The latest version, it's a rich, good-performing way to run a virtual instance of Windows 8 on OS X. Now, VMware's interface is not as really dazzling as Parallels Desktop 8 for Mac. The Parallels Desktop is really fancy look, easy to use, very intuitive. But VMware has more configuration options. So if you're kind of a techie guy, you're going to want VMware, which but if you want the, really something that looks Apple-ish, you're going to want to go with Parallels. And that'll be pretty good. Now, VirtualBox is actually a pretty powerful virtualization product. It's good for the enterprise as well as home use. It's free, which is one of the advantages. It runs slower than VMware Fusion or Parallels. It's more difficult to configure. But so if money's an issue, I'd say you could go with VirtualBox. But if money's not an issue, I'd say go with VMware. But if you want to have something that really looks classy and it's Apple-ish in look and feel, go with Parallels. That was a very good question. Of course, you can put as many virtual machines on your iMac as you want. How many virtual machines you have running at the same time depends on how much RAM you have. If you've got eight gigabytes of RAM, then you're going to want to, you're probably only going to want to run probably two virtual machines at the same time. You've got to have more RAM if you want to run more virtual machines. I typically just do them one at a time because there's not really much reason to have more than one running at the same time. We got an email from a Steve in Reston. Dear Tech Talk, what do you recommend for cleaning up my hard drive? I'm beginning to run out of space and need to delete something. Love the show, Steve in Reston. Well, I kind of like CC Cleaner. I've talked about CC Cleaner before. Now, CC Cleaner has been around for a long time. It was originally called Crap Cleaner. And then it got to be very popular. And then somebody at the company says, I think our branding is being affected by the name. There was some genius in the marketing department. They said, I don't think we should call it Crap Cleaner.
I think I would buy it because it was called that.
Yeah, I think we should call it CC Cleaner. So they changed it to C Cleaner.
Uh-huh.
C Cleaner. It's really C Cleaner. And so actually it's not a bad product. And the nice thing is there's a free version. So what you can do, if you can download C Cleaner, and you can download that C Cleaner. It's free actually, and you can download it from Piriform. They make it Piriform, but you just can Google C Cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
It's a free download. They're by the way also Piriform also makes Recover.
Recover.
I like that because you can recover files of that. So you can get that from Piriform. Recover is also free. They have a free version. So what you can do when you bring up C Cleaner, it's initially going to give you a list of applications, and you can click which applications you'd like to have cleaned, and it will go through, and you can say, I want to clean the cache in my all my cookies. I want to clean all the cache in my browser. It will clean the history in all your applications. So there's no trail on what you've been doing and where you've been. I'm thinking they might need this in Ohio.
It certainly sounds that way. They may need the CC Industrial,
Industrial Strength. Now, C Cleaner also has Registry Cleaner, which, the registry is a little database that every time Windows boots up, it checks and it configures itself using that database. And you can fix your registry. It's got a nice registry, but before it cleans the registry, any sort of errors in the registry, it will do a backup first. It also includes several other tools like uninstall. If you want to uninstall software without using the control panel because there's something wrong with your control panel, it has a startup program that allows you to control which programs are loaded during startup. That sometimes is nice to do. Some programs you don't want to really load, and you can load faster. It's got a system restore program so you can set the Windows restore point. It's got a drive wiper so you can wipe out things from your hard drive, and then nobody can read them.
So let me ask you a question. Yesterday, I tried to, in a hurry, load Firefox onto a computer at my other job, and it loaded all kinds of other nonsense onto the computer, and Firefox wound up not working, so I wound up having to take all this stuff off the computer.
Yeah.
Would CCleaner have been able to remove Firefox and then all of the other junk that I... Because some of this stuff, you don't even know that you put it on the computer, right?
Yeah. But now, see, the thing is, there's when you do the download of Firefox, there's a little kind of a little checkbox. You've got to uncheck all that stuff. They don't actually. You actually can say you don't want all that
stuff.
See,
I never got that box. It never popped up.
See that box, and so you uncheck because they load all these toolbars and all this other stuff,
and
which
it messed up the computer royally.
I hate that. Yeah. So that would have done it, but you could also do it through your regular, through your regular Windows control panel. But you could have done it with the CCleaner.
My point is. It puts stuff in that, since I didn't see that box, I had no idea some of the things that it put on the computer.
Yeah.
Would CCleaner have erased everything?
You'd have had to tell it what to.
So
CCleaner is going to give a list, give you a list of applications. You have to tell it what you want to install. Like if you go to Control Panel.
It's the same process.
I periodically go through Control Panel. If there's something there that I don't know about, I just uninstall it. Because, sometimes stuff shows up and I don't want it.
Yeah, sure.
We got an email from Shell in Alexandria. Dear Doc and Jim, why do Bluetooth connections suddenly decide to disconnect themselves? I have a Bluetooth earphone for my iPad. I also have trouble with my Bluetooth mouse. What's up? Love the show, Shell in Alexandria. Well, Shell, I also have an iPhone, and I pair it with my car. And sometimes the connection works great, but at other times the phone forgets the car forgets the phone, and I've got to transfer all my connections again, and I've got to set up all my buttons. See, the protocol itself is fairly complex and has gone through several iterations. And what happens is maybe in my car Bluetooth connection, I've got an old version of the protocol, and there's no way for me to change it. Now, on my iPhone, I could probably do a software upgrade and get the latest version. So while they went through this evolution of Bluetooth protocol improvement, you've got these mismatches, and it does lead to unreliable operation. Sometimes people have trouble with their mouse, their Bluetooth mouse. It just sort of goes to sleep on them, and they got to shake it. So that's one reason why I'm not using a Bluetooth mouse at home. I've got a USB dongle to connect to
dongle.
It. So that there is a problem with that. I think there's, and I don't really have a solution for you, but I would say that if you simply maybe wait a while till all the devices that you use have the latest version of Bluetooth, I think it'll eventually stabilize.
It's not a very strong signal that the device sends out anyway, because I have a Bluetooth speaker for my iPad, and I decided to test it. I mean, if you get a wall or a door between the device, and it's not going
to
work.
No, it was meant to be, like 10 feet.
Right.
It was like a 10-foot
But
range.
Even so, like within 10 feet, if I walk on the other side of a closed door, it doesn't work.
It doesn't. Yeah, it was designed to be a fairly weak signal for just peripheral devices.
Sure.
That's right. So I think it's a nice technology.
It's
an evolving technology. And that particular connection in my phone is a huge frustration to me. I kept resetting up my buttons over and over again, and I'm just getting actually fed up with it.
You know, every time I talk to somebody on a cell phone using the Bluetooth, I hate the way it sounds. I hate the quality of the headset thing. I don't know if you've ever had any experience with that or what your thoughts are.
What happened?
It just sounds awful. I can't put it into words. There seems to be a lot of background noise.
When I do Bluetooth in my car, one of the problems is it picks up the air conditioner noise.
Yeah.
So if I want to use – so when I'm talking to someone, if the air conditioner is on, it's very distracting. Yeah, it's very distracting to them. So then I turn off the air conditioner, and then I'm sweating in the car.
But you can have a good conversation.
I can have a good conversation. And if I could disconnect it from the Bluetooth in the car and just hold my phone. But then if I'm driving around the district,
you're gonna get pulled over.
I'll get pulled over. And so it's just trade off.
Yeah.
So for me, it's probably best to talk on Bluetooth in my car in the spring. in the fall when I don't need air conditioners.
And otherwise, you know, you can't talk to the doc in his car.
Yeah, but
so.
See, now in the wintertime, I don't mind being cold, but I'll tell you, I hate it
in
being
the summer,
hot. When
yeah,
I'm,
no,
you know,
I'm with you on
so
that.
So there's all my Bluetooth complaints in my car.
You've learned so much about us this morning already. Doc, you're doing more than just operating
that's
the classroom
right.
of the airwaves
I am
over
monitoring
there.
The Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/techtalkonline, and I'm watching for your comments during the show.
While we're on the radio, it is actually a classroom of the airwaves. This is
yes.
Tech Talk, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. And our instruction continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for...
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're going to be discussing Steve Anthony Ballmer. That's what his mother called him, Steve Anthony. Stephen.
How do you know that?
Because I've just, you know, I really know. She called him Stephen Anthony.
You notice how he glossed
Stephen
over that.
Stephen Anthony, come in here for dinner now.
Okay,
Stephen Anthony Baltimore is currently CEO of Microsoft. He announced.
Wait a minute. Is he Ballmer or Baltimore?
Ballmer.
Ballmer. That's Ballmer. How we say Baltimore. That's... Baltimore is Ballmer.
That's Ballmer.
But he's Ballmer. Ballmer.
He's the real Ballmer. He's the real Ballmer. He announced he'll retire from Microsoft this month, August. No, in next year, August 2014. Yeah, next year. Next August. Ballmer was born March 24th.
Not in Baltimore.
1956 in Detroit.
Oh, that's different, but kind of the same.
Kind of the same, but Detroit is bankrupt.
And we're getting close in Baltimore, right. Let me tell you.
His father was a manager at the Ford Motor Company. He grew up in the community of Farmington Hills, Michigan. In 1973, he graduated from Detroit County Day School. And while he was going to that day school, he also took college prep courses and engineering classes at Lawrence Technological University. Now, it's interesting that he scored a perfect 800 in the math section of the SAT.
Uh-huh.
So he's quite the mathematician.
We'd kind of expect that, right?
Yeah. I don't know. He doesn't behave like a mathematician, to tell you the truth. You know, he yells at people, throws chairs. You know, I don't think he doesn't look like a mathematician. So I was surprised to see that 800 on the SAT in his math.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Harvard. And he graduated cum laude, magna cum laude. That's one notch below summa cum laude.
Mm-hmm.
So that's with great praise in Latin. See, I like to
I took
4 years of Latin in high school, mm-hmm. and then I learned it was a dead language. You know,
but it's the root of all language.
So
it was a great choice.
It is the root. It is the root of all romance languages.
Okay.
So when I went to college, very cleverly, I took German that had nothing to do with Latin. See, you know, those were the days when I didn't know what I was doing.
But your brain's better.
I survived. Mm-hmm. So he graduated from Harvard with a Bachelor of Science in Applied Math, as you would expect, and Economics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was already kind of going into this management deal while he was at Harvard. He managed the football team. I mean, I didn't even know Harvard had a football team, to tell you the truth.
Actually, I think I may have seen that somewhere.
Yeah, that's they're not really known for football.
I know they have a baseball team.
They've got a baseball team. I don't know much about their football team. He worked on two newspapers there, the Harvard Crimson and the Harvard Advocate. So he was basically also kind of a business manager there. So he really liked to, you know, kind of run things. And now this is the significant connection. He lived down the hall from Bill Gates while Bill Gates was a sophomore. Now, it turned out Bill never made it to the junior year. Bill did make it to the sophomore year. And Stephen Anthony Ballmer lived down the hallway from Bill Gates. Well, Bill was a sophomore. And that's how they got to know each other. So Ballmer graduated from Harvard. And then he got this really great job as an assistant product manager at Procter & Gamble. And he was there for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he thought to himself, he says, you know, this is just not all that I was hoping to be. I think I can be more than an assistant product manager at Procter & Gamble. So he decided to go to the Stanford Graduate School of Business. And he went there around in 1980, near the end of 79, 1980. So he's out in California. Not far from Seattle, where, of course, Bill was with Microsoft. And Bill Gates convinced him to drop out of school and join Microsoft. That's kind of Bill's MO, gets people to drop out of school to join Microsoft. So he dropped. But Ballmer did have a bachelor degree. He dropped out of graduate school.
So back up. They lived down the hall from one another at Harvard. So they knew each other at Harvard then.
They knew each other at Harvard. Right. Yeah, that's where they knew each other.
Okay.
That's where they met, and they got to know each other. They probably went out, drank beer in the evening. I don't know what they did. Did math problems.
Yeah. I don't know.
Probably well, actually, not. Bill Gates was pretty good at math, too, by the way. And there was actually, I don't have this on the notes, but there was this big math competition, and they both took this math test, and Ballmer outscored Bill Gates on the math deal, so there was a little bit of math competition between the two while they were at Harvard. So Bill called up Stephen Anthony, and he said, "Stephen Anthony, would you like to work at Microsoft?" And so Steve said, "Okay, I'll come up there." And Bill offered him a salary of $50,000 to come to Microsoft, and Ballmer was the first business guy that he hired. The first 29 employees were all techies. So Ballmer was the business guy.
In 1980, that's not bad money.
Yeah, it's not bad money. And he also got approximately 8% equity.
That's even better.
That was the big money.
Yeah, there you go.
There's the big money. Okay, in 2003, Ballmer sold a portion of his shareholdings in Microsoft. I guess he was trying to diversify. That brought him down to around a 4% stake.
Mm-hmm.
In his tenure at Microsoft, Ballmer's headed several Microsoft divisions. He included operations, operating systems development, sales, and support. I think it was really more on the sort of the salesy side. From February 92 onwards, he was executive vice president for sales and support, because that was his forte, sales and support. Ballmer also led, this surprised me, Microsoft's development team for the .NET framework. This was their programming language that basically would support internet and web applications. Ballmer was then promoted to the president of Microsoft, a title he held from July of 1998 to February of 2001, making him in fact the number two guy at the company. Now, when he was though president of Microsoft, Bill Gates stayed on as chief software architect. So Bill was still running the place, the technical place. Mm-hmm. And then I guess Ballmer was running the cash flow, the business side of it as president. In January of 2000, Ballmer was officially named CEO. In 2000 he was named CEO, but then Bill stayed on as chief software architect. So there was a big conflict around 2000 because Bill still wanted to muck around and micromanage, and then Ballmer was trying to run the place. But so he really couldn't have free reign until Bill Gates stepped down as chief software architect in 2006. That's when Bill moved into all of his, you know, the Gates Foundation and all the charities, mm-hmm. sort of his Buffett initiatives. He and Warren Buffett working on charities, you know, they talk about it over bridge. And see, Buffett and his wife and then Bill Gates and his wife play bridge. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
It's like a sidebar. So they were talking about the charities over bridge. And so around 2006, Bill Gates was, you know, changing his whole focus away from Microsoft into charities and giving back. And so he pulled out of Microsoft in 2006. But there was quite a bit of conflict between Ballmer and Gates, you know, around 2000, 2001, 2002, because they were trying to define their roles.
Sure.
Now, since Bill Gates' official retirement, Ballmer oversaw a dramatic shift away from the company's PC heritage, and he replaced most of the major divisions because he actually had to take Microsoft through the post-PC era. And Ballmer drove Microsoft's cloud strategy with the acquisition of companies such as Skype for like $8 billion or $9 billion. Under Ballmer's tenure as CEO, Microsoft revenues surged from $25 billion to $70 billion, and its income increased 215% to $23 billion. He also built several new businesses, including the data centers division and the Xbox division. Now, he was heavily criticized for failing to compete with the iPod, the iPhone smartphone, the iPad tablet computer, and he basically constantly stayed out of the whole tablet market and all of these other portable devices because he felt it threatened their cash cow, Windows and Microsoft Office. And so trying to protect the cash cow actually kept them from entering and taking advantage of the next cash cow.
Mm-hmm.
For that reason, Microsoft's share price has been stagnant during his tenure.
Huh.
Even though their revenues went up, their profits went up, the share price more or less stayed constant during his tenure, and that's why many investors were screaming for his ouster. Now, the other thing that he did that was particularly troubling, he set up a stack ranking system where that really was very devastating for morale within the company. On August 23rd, 2013, Steve Ballmer announced that he would retire within 12 months. As soon as he made that announcement, stocks soared. Ballmer's net worth went up $1 billion because of the stocks that he was holding, and he's currently estimated to be worth about $15.2 billion. So there you go. All you wanted to know about Steve Anthony Ballmer.
There you go, and I hope you were paying attention, because in just about 60 seconds, you'll have a chance to put your knowledge into action to win free food on the pop quiz here on Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. We'll be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now it's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Classroom of the Airwaves.
Yes,
as we've given you a small hint, and of course, if it's a classroom, there is going to be an assessment.
Oh, I hate that word.
There will be an assessment. This will be a pop quiz. And if you get
better.
The correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll win two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room or the Karim Dining Room, in addition to getting an A for the day. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Stephen Anthony Ballmer, the CEO of Microsoft. What company did Stephen Anthony Ballmer work for prior to Microsoft?
Okay. Now, if you're paying attention and have that answer, you need to get to us quickly by calling us. If you're calling from north of Farmington Hills, Michigan, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of the campus at Harvard University, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, everybody else on the globe can call us at 877-936-9333, also known as the wild card line. Or,
yes. Yeah, or if you're in Bangladesh, you can call us using Skype. Simply go to Tech Talk Radio 1 and you'll be connected free of charge
okay.
to the studio.
Very good. The phones are now lighting up.
Oh, that's excellent. You know, the Earth-to-Moon laser communication tests are ongoing. NASA's ready to launch a mission that will use lasers to test two-way communication between the Earth and the Moon. The Lunar Laser Communication Demonstration will be on board the Lunar Atmospheric and Dust Environmental Explorer called LADEE, which will launch September 6th. LADEE. Now, the LLCD's mission, that, of course, LLCD is Lunar Laser Communication Demonstration, is to prove the viability of using laser communication. They'll encode data on a laser beam. It'll be transmitted between the Earth and the Moon at 622 megabits per second, which is five times faster than they're currently using microwave technology.
Mm-hmm.
The primary ground terminal to receive the laser signals will be located at NASA's White Sands Complex in New Mexico, because that's got the sort of the best weather. And the equipment was built by MIT's Lincoln Laboratories. There are a couple of other alternate ground sites in the event there is cloud cover at White Sands. LLCD will run for 30 days. It's scheduled to launch. Then they're scheduled to launch a second laser communication test in 2017 to test laser communication in deep space. They're using this because the radio and microwave portion of the electromagnetic spectrum is so close to capacity that they want to use something which is a little less regulated in a less crowded part of the spectrum. LLCD can send data six times faster than they can using equivalent state-of-the-art systems, and they use a smaller transmitter using less power consumption. It will operate in the near infrared, which is around a 1 micron wavelength. See, visible light's around half a micron, so this is about 1 micron wavelength, so-called near infrared.
Now, we talked about this at the beginning of the show, that basically fiber optics is laser communications, but is there any possible application for, but that's through a cable. Is there any possible application for just lens-to-lens laser communication on Earth, do you think?
Well, you could do that, but you'd have weather problems.
Oh, okay.
So, if you don't mind, that doesn't go through fog, doesn't go through other things.
So forget that.
Yeah, I'd forget it.
Okay. All right. We are about to play the quiz. We have somebody here on line number one. Let's go to Jim calling us from Vienna, Virginia. Jim, good morning and welcome.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing well. Dr. Schertz, please ask the question.
Yes. Early in the show, we're talking about Stephen Anthony Ballmer. Where did he work prior to Microsoft?
A fine company called Procter & Gamble.
That is correct. You'll win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room.
You would not work for Procter & Gamble, would you, Jim?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you're singing their praises.
Yes.
Jim, thank you for calling. Thank you for listening on this fine summer morning. And stand by because adjunct professor Andrew Mitchell, who is in charge of prize distribution, will be on the line with you in just a moment in order to get your information to send you the prize. That has been the Pop Quiz here on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. We will be back with more of the Classroom of the Airwaves right after this here on Tech Talk.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. An executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford culinary arts and hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And NASDAQ blames the New York Stock Exchange,
of course,
for the three-hour outage. Now, the company behind NASDAQ Stock Exchange said that last week's three-hour outage was part. They did admit it's partly our own fault, but mostly it's the fault of the New York Stock Exchange. The glitch forced NASDAQ to take trading offline Thursday of 2 weeks ago, and thousands of NASDAQ-listed stocks were frozen in place for 3 hours across the U.S. The company released its preliminary findings on the issue, saying that its securities information processor called the SIP, the SIP, was overwhelmed by information from the New York Stock Exchange. NASDAQ OMX Group claimed that the firm sent over 20 connect and disconnect sequences to SIP, along with a stream of inaccurate symbols, and generated quote rejects. The SIP is set to handle around 500,000 messages per second across its 50 ports, or 10,000 per port per second. But NASDAQ said that the New York Stock Exchange topped with more than 26,000 updates per port per second as it tried to reconnect, compared to the typical 1,000 messages per port. Now, the company did admit that the failure revealed the problem with the SIP's source code. This latent flaw prevented the system's built-in redundancy capabilities from failing over cleanly and delayed the return of the system to users. So the combination of large system input, which they blamed on the New York Stock Exchange, combined with the software failure, caused the item. So they're working on it now, and I think if they fix it, they should be able to handle anything that the New York Stock Exchange can throw at them. The compact cassette is celebrating its 50th anniversary.
That's amazing.
On August 30th, 1963, the compact cassette was revealed on the Berlin radio show.
Which is a radio show and not a Classroom of the Airwaves.
It's not a classroom. No, it's not. There's no pop quiz on the Berlin radio show. When Philips unveiled its new compact cassette tape and the accompanying recorder, it was designed to entice people to buy a portable recording system. See, in those days, remember, you had the big tape recorders with the reel-to-reel. You'd have a big, you'd have these, like, these 10-inch reels of tape.
Mm-hmm.
So people just, you know, weren't comfortable, you know, if they wanted to record something, having a big tape recorder with two 10-inch reels, taking it, you know, taking it on a picnic to record their voice. It was more like for studio recording.
What you're saying is not portable.
It's not portable, no. Now, the compact recorder was not really hi-fi. In fact, it was really, you know, I mean, the sound quality wasn't that great. It was okay for music somewhat. It wasn't hi-fi. It was good for dictation, but it was never meant to be high. It was high fidelity. It was just meant to be portable.
Right.
Now, and so the company succeeded in putting back a format that delivered many convenience improvements over existing systems, and its innovative approach allowed them to use existing technologies in a different way. Now, it turned out that a lot of the groundwork had been done by CBS and 3M. You see, CBS and 3M had been trying to develop a technique to make long-length recordings without having a huge amount of tape.
Sure.
So they had been working on quarter-inch tape, and which was thin tape. But, you know, prior to that, the tape was much wider. They were using quarter-inch tape, and they slowed the movement of the tape down to 1.875 inches per second, and that was as slow as they could move it through and still get a sound reproduction that was good enough for the consumer market. So they just kept slowing the tape down until they got a quality that people was still acceptable, not too bad. And, of course, if the tape moves slowly, it means that you can do an hour show with less tape. So the reel's smaller, and so that was an important factor. So CBS and 3M had actually proven that this was the tape format that would be useful. So Philips just ran with it. They took that tape format with that thing, and they wrapped the electronics around it, packaged it, and put it out. And they released the compact cassette tape.
That's the
50
thing.
50 years ago.
That's the thing about tape. The faster the speed, the higher quality of the of the audio, right?
That's right. And the bigger the reel.
Okay, now let's play something here. This is not on tape. This is digital.
Okay.
Which is a whole different thing.
Oh, yeah, that for sure. That
sounds
much
better. But
that
means you're going to take a little break here. So we'll be back in just a minute. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2. Tech Talk continues right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Ken Hutchinson had some input for you on the Firefox installation. He says, Jim, what Firefox does now is have a series of windows instead of checkboxes for all that unwanted software that look as if that you install when you're installing Firefox. So if you look closely at those windows, they're for installing other things. At every window, there's a box labeled cancel that allows you to skip the installation of the unwanted thing and proceed to the actual installation of Firefox.
You know, it's funny, but
There may be many of these windows or several, and you have to keep clicking several times until you finally get to the Firefox window.
The thing, because I did notice these boxes clicking up, and I tried to get rid of them, but they are not. They don't go away easily.
You've got to get rid of all of them until you just have the Firefox window left.
That's ridiculous. And you know what? It turned me away from Firefox. I spent 90 minutes yesterday trying to recover a computer that a coworker screwed up, and then I made even worse. This is I'm upset with Firefox.
Yeah, all right. Okay, let's talk about the iPhone trade-in program.
Yes.
Okay, now, consumers are getting a choice because now they're, you know, these iPhones are really a value, and, you know, people want to get the latest version, but the old one is still quite good. And so now they're actually setting up systems where you can trade in your iPhone very neatly. And AT&T, T-Mobile, and Verizon have all launched early upgrade programs that let you trade in old devices early. But other people are jumping in the fray. Apple has now entered the mix by offering gift cards for recycled iPhones. Now, retailers like Best Buy, Radio Shack, Amazon also have trade-in programs, as will do manufacturers like Samsung, HTC, and others. So, like, for instance, a two-year-old iPhone 4S gets as much as $230 if you trade it into Amazon, $230. Now, Apple, for that 4S, is going to give you $221. Verizon only gives you $162. So I'm thinking, I don't know, Verizon's really low on the total bowl.
Really,
Radio Shack gives $195. Let's take the iPhone 4. Amazon gives $200, and Verizon only gives $83.
Yeah.
And Best Buy gives $105. I'll have the whole table when we in the Tech Talk page. Now let's look at the iPhone 5. Amazon gives $389 trade-in. Apple gives $336, and Verizon gives $259. So there is a variation there, but you know, the idea is that typically when you do the upgrade and you up your contract, you've got to pay another $200. So the trade-in should cover the $200. You can upgrade essentially free.
Now, the new iPhone, is it going to be the iPhone 6 or did they stop giving it?
No, the next one's going to be 5S.
5S, okay.
The 5S, because they do the double. The double whammy. You know, they do the 5S and then they'll do the 6 later on.
Okay.
So the 5S, I think, is coming out with a faster processor. So they're going to do some interesting things.
Are you going to upgrade or are you going to stay where you are?
Well, when my contract is up, I'll upgrade.
I wouldn't bother doing it ahead of time. I'm not going to.
And the thing is, I may keep my old iPhone because when I travel, it's so convenient because basically I it's unlocked and I use the SIM card. And so, you know, it's not a bad idea. It's convenient to have the phone with me, and it's got Wi-Fi, so I get all my emails with the Wi-Fi. So it's actually quite convenient. The Microsoft and Google are going to sue over the FISA demands. You know, FISA is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
Mm-hmm.
There's a court. Now, Microsoft says it plans to move ahead with a lawsuit against the U.S. government to affirm the right of businesses to disclose limited information about government demands for data. In a separate legal filing, Microsoft and Google challenged the gag order that typically accompanies FISA demands. The two companies asserted that they have First Amendment rights to publish the number of FISA requests. Now, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence said that the U.S. government presumably believes an acceptable compromise would be to release the total number of orders issued in a 12-month period, but not give the specifics on any one order. The technology companies like Google and Microsoft face a huge challenge because they're losing cloud business to customers, international customers, that they just don't want to have their data looked at. For U.S. companies are being forced to surrender data and not being able to test the limited scope of such demand creates huge mistrust. The Information Technology Innovation Institute, a technology think tank, recently projected that the U.S. cloud service providers, because of their inability to provide meaningful privacy projection, could lose between $22 billion and $35 billion to competitors in Europe over the next 3 years. So this is a huge problem. Listen, we love your emails.
Yes.
Send us emails to techtalk@stratford.edu. We also want you to sign up for the podcast. You can either go to, we're on Apple iTunes. We're also, you also go to techtalkonline.com and sign up for the podcast. And certainly go to stratford.edu and check out the programs and let them know that you heard about it on Tech Talk.
And indeed, if you missed any of this program, you can tune in at 4 o'clock today and you'll hear this program rebroadcast here on Federal News Radio. See you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This being the home of the Washington Nationals, we have a game today, a home game against the New York Mets. Game coverage starts at 6:30. The first pitch at 7:05 here on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. The weather forecast, sunny, hot, near 90 degrees. Right now, 75 outside our studios in Northwest at 10 AM.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Power of Attorney, an educational program focusing on legal developments affecting businesses and individuals. And now your hosts, the attorneys from Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman.
Good morning and welcome to Power of Attorney Radio. Power of Attorney Radio is brought to you by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm headquartered in Reston, Virginia. Power of Attorney is an educational radio program that focuses on legal developments that affect businesses and individuals. It airs every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. and 820 a.m. in the Washington, D.C. area and at www.federalnewsradio.com. My name is Leslie Fenton.